Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, please go to our official website, bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and you'll see the link to becoming a Patreon sponsor in the upper right-hand corner. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk about the history of bodybuilding, and we also talk to the legends of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have part two of our interview with Victor Terra. Victor was one of the top bodybuilders in the 1980s. He was a great teenage bodybuilding champion, winning the Teenage Mr. America and the Teenage Mr. USA. And then he went on to compete mostly in the AAU and the NABBA organization. And he won his height class, the short class, in the 1985 AAU Mr. America, and then went on to win the overall at the NABBA Mr. Universe, and then also the pro NABBA Mr. Universe. So he was a great bodybuilder, kind of underrated in today's bodybuilding scene, I guess. People have kind of forgotten about him, but he was a really, really great bodybuilder. So we got Victor on the show last week for part one of our interview, and we're going to continue with part two, where he's going to talk about the other competitions that he competed in, including that Mr. America and the Mr. Universe wins, and what he's doing now. And we'll also talk about his training program as well. So you're going to really enjoy this interview with Victor Terra coming up in a minute. All right, what else is going on, guys? I just got back from Las Vegas, where I attended the Mr. Olympia this year, 2024 Mr. Olympia. It was at the Resorts World Hotel in Las Vegas, and it was a really great show, one of the best Olympias I've seen in a while. The theater was really nice. It was really cool having it back in Las Vegas again. And there was a lot of surprises, a lot of drama. We have a new Mr. Olympia, Samson Dauda, who is a really big bodybuilder, kind of in the tradition of Lee Haney. Got that big, full muscle bellies, 6'1", over 300 pounds. Just a huge guy, great shape, great symmetry. Always just had a little trouble sometimes coming in hard enough shape. He was third in this contest last year behind Hadi Chupin and Derek Lunsford, who won the show last year. And he got it together this year. It was pretty close, I thought, between those three again. Derek was not as good as he was last year. It looks like his legs are down in size and his upper body got bigger, so he was a little bit out of balance. I thought he looked really good on Friday, but on Saturday I could see he was going to take third. And Hadi Chupin was in great shape again. He just won the Arnold Classic earlier this year. He was in shredded condition for that. He was very close to that condition here. And I thought he looked really good. Not as good from the back, though, as Derek is. So Hadi took second and Samson won. I thought Samson was actually holding a little bit of water on Friday. And I thought he was going to take third again. I thought it was kind of going to be the same placings as last year. But then by Saturday, Samson had filled out so much. He was so big and so round. I thought he dominated on Saturday. So I think he was a good winner. And I think he can hold on to this title for a while, as long as he can just come in hard enough condition. That's really going to be the key. Because if he comes in off, a smaller guy like Hadi or even Derek can beat him again. So Hadi beat him. He beat Samson earlier this year at the Arnold, and then the Arnold UK beat him twice. So Hadi can win this over Samson. So Samson's just got to come in good condition. If he does, I don't really think anybody's going to challenge him. I was looking forward to seeing Andrew Jacked, who's got an incredible structure, great frame, great symmetry. But he was off again. He was off last year at the Olympia, and he took fifth place. And I don't know. He seems to have a very laid-back attitude, almost like he doesn't really care. he's just kind of there. And he doesn't have any hunger on stage. And I think that's what really hurts him. His posing could be improved. His condition was really good just standing there. But I don't know really what he needs. I don't know if he needs more size because he's so tall and he's got such long frame or long limbs. Or if he needs to come in harder. I don't know. He just doesn't. He's one of those guys, he seems like He's got great genetics. He knows he's got great genetics, and he just doesn't seem to have the hunger. And that's frustrating for fans when you see someone like that. You see how good he could be, and he's just not bringing it. The guy who took fourth above Andrew Jacked, Martin Fitzwater, this was his first Olympia. He won a show earlier in the year, but then he was in the New York Pro and he got second to Nick Walker. And this kid's got a great physique. I don't know how old he is, but he's got really good symmetry. He's got a smaller waist. Everything's in balance. He was big, probably some of the best legs in the whole contest, and he was in rock hard condition. And he's got that hunger. You could tell he's young, he's hungry, he wants to win. He was super excited to be there. So this kid's got a great future. I think he can win this contest one day, and I think he's going to do really well. I actually thought he might have even beat Darren, who was Mr. Olympia last year. It was really close. I think if they would have compared him more to Darren, I think he could possibly pull ahead of him at this show. So I think he's got a really good future, and it's going to be exciting to see what he does next year. Let's see who after that. Hunter Labrada looked really good on Friday, probably the best condition he's ever been in. He was very big, bigger than he was last year, and he was in really good condition. But by Saturday, he looked like he smoothed out. It was a big difference between Friday and Saturday. I wish they would hold this Mr. Olympia in one day. I think we would see much better condition of the bodybuilders. They do the prejudging now on Friday night, and they did move it up a little bit. They used to do it last, after like five other events took place. So it would come on really late. These guys would get on at like 10:30 at night. And that's West Coast time. If you're on the East Coast, that's like 1:30 in the morning. That's really not good for their condition. They're eating all day, trying to, come in hard condition. And it's just too hard to do it that late at night. What they used to do with the Mr. Olympia was they would hold it on Saturday. They would have the prejudging at 12 and the night show at 7. And it was way, way better. The guys were in much better condition. So they did move it up, I think, till 8 o'clock this time. They did ran a couple events and then they started the Mr. Olympia prejudging. So that was a little bit of an improvement, but I think they just need to hold it on a whole different day. I think they need to hold it by itself. They have the expo and that's where they do most of the prejudging. In fact, all of the prejudging for all the events except the Mr. Olympia is held at the expo during the day. So, for example, the Classic Physique was held on Saturday morning at 9:30, and all of those guys were in great condition. Because of, I think, the time difference, they held it in the morning. So if they would do the same thing with the Mr. Olympia, I would just schedule the Mr. Olympia for 12 or 1 o'clock on at the theater. I'm sure they have access to the theater all weekend because they've rented it out for the whole weekend. So just have it at the theater, not at the expo, and just do the Mr. Olympia by itself. That way they can do more comparisons, they can spend more time doing it, and the bodybuilders will be in much better condition, I think. So the promoters of the contest, it seemed like they're open to changes when the press speaks out. Hopefully, they'll do that. I think that would make a huge difference in the condition of the athletes, and I think it would make the show much better. So, hopefully, they can do that. But yeah, I think it's just too hard. And the condition from the athletes changes so much from one day to the next. It's radically different. Sometimes they look radically worse, like Hunter Labrada did, or sometimes they look better, like Samson did. So, I think holding it on the same day would just make it a more fairer for everybody. I think it would make it a lot easier for the athletes. And I think people would appreciate seeing more of the bodybuilders. We don't like seeing them late on Friday night. I'd rather go to the prejudging in the afternoon on Saturday and see them. The Classic Physique was really good. The fans seem very, very excited about this division. I could almost see this division taking over bodybuilding if the bodybuilding gets worse, which I think more people are going into divisions like Classic Physique or Men's Physique, because I just don't think there's a lot of people out there that want to be big, big bodybuilders. It's too much you have too much stuff to take and you got to eat too much. And I just don't think it's the same as it used to be like the 80s. So we'll see. We'll see if bodybuilding continues to go down and the talent doesn't show up, like this guy like Martin Fitzwater, but more guys like him don't show up. I think it's just going to continue to go down, and I think Classic is going to go up. Classic had 54 competitors, and some of these guys were amazing. Some guys I never heard of from other countries were just in incredible condition. Of course, some of them got lost in the lineup because 54 competitors, how do you stand out? There's about five or six big names, like, of course, Chris Bumstead, who won his sixth time this year. And then you got a new guy, Mike Sommerfeld, who's from Germany. He was really good. You've got Ramon Dino, who is from Brazil. He's been at the top for the last couple of years. I think he took second last year. Leslie Vissers, who's from the Netherlands. Leslie won the Arnold this year, and he's been in the Olympia for several years. And then you got Urs Kalinski, I think. Probably pronouncing his name wrong. He is from Germany, and he has been at the top for the last few years. And also Breon Ansley, who won the competition, the Classic Physique, 2 years in a row until Bumstead beat him. So you got these big names. Everybody knows these guys, and these guys are the ones that are usually called out for that first call out with a couple other guys. But there's a lot of other unknown guys, younger guys that come from other countries that aren't even known. They kind of get lost. So it's hard. It's because there's so many people in it. But these guys were in fantastic condition. And I have to say, at the night show, a lot of them gave great posing routines. Chris Bumstead always does a really good posing routine, and he does it to good music. He used the music, I think, from Heart. Guys, all you got to do is pick a song from the 80s. You're going to have a good song. You know, that's all you got to do. Some of the music these guys pick is just, I don't know where they get it from. In fact, at the Mr. Olympia, a couple of the guys like Andrew Jacked and I think Brandon Curry, who was a former Mr. Olympia, were using rap songs with the N-word in it, and they were just not playing the songs. Like Andrew Jack came out, and they were playing another song they had, I guess, on standby. And he got really mad because they weren't playing his song because he had done the routine to these three different songs. But once they heard that N-word, they cut it, and he walked off the stage. He looked around like, what are you guys doing? And then I think he hit like one or two more poses, and he walked off the stage. So he didn't even do his routine. So if these guys would pick the right songs, they would get the audience more involved. And I think Classic Physique is the only division that's really making an effort with the posing. So that's another reason to like this division. And the physiques are great. The physiques look like the 1980s bodybuilders, except they're even more refined and probably bigger. Chris Bumstead, 6'1", he weighed 240 pounds. So he's not a small bodybuilder. But these guys have great, great shape. Great shape, great condition, great bodybuilders. So I hope that division continues to grow. And Chris Bumstead announced his retirement. If you haven't heard, after he won the sixth time, he announced his retirement. So he will not be back. So we'll have a new champion next year. So I'm sure all these up-and-coming guys, these other five guys I mentioned, are going to be really excited because they now feel they're going to have a chance to win the contest. And I'll tell you that Mike Sommerfeld guy, he doesn't have the great symmetry and shape that Bumstead has. He's shorter. And he kind of looks more like a bodybuilder, kind of look like a Franco Arnold rematch. And he's got a great back, like Franco did, really good legs, good symmetry. And he was much harder than Chris at the night show. Chris looked a little flat at the night show, but I figured he was still going to win. But I thought Chris dominated at the prejudging. They were close. There were some good bodybuilders in there, but I thought he convincingly won at the prejudging. So he deservedly won another title. So congratulations to Chris Bumstead, an amazing champion. He gave a great speech. This guy's really got his head together. He really knows what's important in life, and he's really conducted his life perfectly. He's already a multi-millionaire. This guy makes so much money, 25 million followers on Instagram. That's more than most movie stars have, and everybody knows this guy. So it's going to be a huge blow to the industry because he left, because there's so many people that would come to these contests just to see him. So now we're going to lose that, unfortunately. But he will still be in the industry. In fact, he said he's going to donate some of his own money to the Classic Physique next year so they can get the prize money up. They raised the prize money at the Mr. Olympia to $600,000. That's the most money ever given at a contest. And Arnold was promising $500,000 next year, but they gave $600,000 to Samson Dauda for the winner. The Classic Physique winner, Chris Bumstead, only got $60,000. So it's 10 times less. I'm sure that will come up next year with Chris Bumstead helping out. So it was a great contest. Had a great time, a lot of fun. I was on my diet the whole weekend because I'm dieting. And so I got a hotel room with a full kitchenette. I brought my food with me, and then whatever food I didn't have, I just went shopping. So I was very proud of myself that I stayed on every meal, every day, never went off my diet, didn't eat out at any restaurants or anything, except for a couple of those little protein samples they had to give out at the expo. But other than that, totally stayed on my diet, didn't go backwards at all. So I was very happy about that. And I dodged the hurricane because we had a hurricane out here in Florida again. Hurricane Milton, which came on Wednesday, and I was supposed to fly out on Wednesday, so I changed my flight to Tuesday. And then my mom suggested that I come into Chicago instead and fly out on Monday. And at first, we couldn't even find a flight going from Florida to Chicago. They were all gone. I've never seen that before. I've never seen no available flights at all. So I ended up flying out to Milwaukee, and then my brother came and picked me up, which is 2 hours from Chicago. And they picked me up, and I spent 2 days out there on Monday and Tuesday. And then I left on Wednesday and flew to Vegas. So thanks to my mom and dad and my brother for helping me out. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made it to Vegas at all. And I just flew direct to Vegas on Wednesday and then came home on Sunday. So at least where I live, I didn't get as much damage as the other one, Hurricane Helene, where I got some flooding. But this one, except for the high winds, because the hurricane didn't hit Tampa directly, it hit Sarasota below us. So we didn't really get as much damage as Hurricane Helene, which caused incredible flooding from the storm surge that we got from Hurricane Helene, which was actually off the coast of Florida. It actually didn't even hit Florida, but we got that storm surge from the ocean. But we didn't get that much this time, so hopefully that's it for hurricanes for this year. I'm sure they'll be back next year because it seems like it's happening every year. But had a great time, and I will be on my newsletter that I send out to all my Patreon donors. I'm going to go over the 60th anniversary of the Mr. Olympia. So you guys will be getting that this week. And like I said, if you guys are interested in becoming a Patreon donor, you can do it for as little as $5 a month. Just go to the description below in the description of this podcast. But you can also go to bodybuildinglegendshow.com and you can find the link there in the upper right-hand corner. All right. Well, that's it for us. No emails this week. If you guys want to send me an email on the Victor Terra interview, just send it to naturalolympia@gmail.com. And let's get to our interview with Victor Terra. This is part two of our interview where we talk about Victor's career and a little bit about his training and nutrition. Here we go. So the Teenage America, that was AAU. And I'm looking at the list here. So Steve Senka was from my gym in Chicago.
No, really?
Yeah, he was a good teenager.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that was actually, if you look at the lineup, you know, actually, I think all three classes were doing it was good. It was a good year.
Yeah. And, Van Smith, Van Walcott Smith got third.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And then in the medium class, now I did the Teenage America when it was in Chicago the year before in 82, and Jim Cameron, not the director, but Jim Cameron, the bodybuilder.
Yeah.
He was second to David Hawk. I remember he had good symmetry.
Oh, wow, David Hawk. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Jim Cameron won the medium class. And then John LaRue, another Chicago guy, huge guy.
Yes.
He won the medium tall. And Arthur Prince, who is from the
Massachusetts, yeah.
He won the tall class. So, yeah, a stacked lineup. A lot of great competition.
You know, the funny thing is Arthur Prince, Teddy Lope, Mike Quinn. These are all guys that, you know, that I competed against in Massachusetts and the Bay State. Yeah, it was pretty hefty competition then.
Yeah. And were you 18 then, Victor?
I had just turned 18.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then the Teenage USA.
Yep.
That was like a week or two later. That was in California, you said, right? That was MPC.
No, the NPC, the Teenage Nationals, which I was going to do, which was going to be another 2 weeks, and I lost my peak. I forget who ended up winning that year. Can't think of his name.
I can look it up.
But I think he actually was, he actually competed in the the NPC Teenage USA with me, and I beat him there. So I probably could have been like a sweep in.
Oh,
in,
DeMilo. Yeah. James DeMilo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So it was.
So you didn't do that show because you lost your peak.
No, Bob's like, you know, look, you know, it's pretty hard to hold the peak. We got to travel all the way to California. So, you know, he had my best interest in
where was heart, the where know. Was the USA at?
Might have been Chicago. Can't remember. I've been, you know, honestly, John, between you and I, I've been so far removed from from the sport, you know, and
it's only 40 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not because of anything. Because me and Bob stayed, you know, we always talk about, you know, kids that he worked with and all that stuff, you know, and he always kept me, you know, updated with stuff, you know, but, yeah. You know, I was working 60, 70 hours a week, you know, literally just, wow. You know, and it's, and to this day, I still work about 60 hours a week.
Do you really? Wow.
Yeah. And it's,
yeah,
and
so it's just work that I love.
It's not, it's, you know, yeah. it's beyond money actually. So, which is good.
So you won the middleweight class at the Teen USA, and then Franco Santoriello, who went on to be a pro bodybuilder, he was a lightweight winner. So that must have been the start of Franco's career.
Yes.
And then Demilo won the light heavyweights.
Yeah.
He was a great bodybuilder too.
Absolutely.
And then Vinny Ponzo won the heavyweights, and you won the overall.
Yeah, exactly. those were just, you know, it was an era that was filled with really good bodybuilders.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And when you look back, you say, okay, you've beat some great athletes, you know.
Yeah.
So be proud, and because you might not have been, you know, in top condition, they could have beat you. And also, so, but yeah, it's you can say, look, you know, I won this competition, but there's only 5-6 guys, you know. No, it was loaded.
Oh yeah, teenage shows.
It was loaded.
Yeah,
and I like the fact that you like the 80s, because I do too.
Yes.
I really believe, you know, like if you look at the Lee Haney's of the world and all that stuff, that was the era.
That was the era. That's my favorite. That was,
you know, Gaspari, all those guys. That was it.
Lee Lombardo. You know? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, after you won the overall at the AAU Teen America and then the overall at the MPC Teen USA, were you thinking, I'm going to go one way or the other, or were you just going to do both?
Me and Bob had that conversation a few times in – he wanted to see, you know, where I stood, right?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, you know, I didn't know what I wanted, right? I didn't know what was better. But Bob was that kind of guy, like, you know, he's like, I'm going to give you two scenarios. You go to the NPC, you know, it could take you a few years. You got to pay your dues, all this stuff. He goes, you go to Europe. He goes, when bodybuilding started, you know, Steve Reeves, all these big names, you know, Arnold, you know, all this stuff. He goes, you're going to be respected. There's going to be a red carpet for you. Mm-hmm. And the kind of person that you are, you're good in front of people. You know, you give, you know, great seminars. You know, I said, you'll do really well. You know, he just put it out there. He just put, you know, the plate was there. You know, everything was perfect. And I had to make the choice.
Okay.
And I said, Bob, I said, okay, let's go for the universe, you know, after the America. And, and then of course, when it didn't happen, I felt like I was back as that, you know, 15-year-old sitting there in place. Right. I felt, I looked at all the pictures, and you know, sometimes you feel like, you know what, you did everything right. You know, you were in better, you know, you were in just as good condition. You had better shape, you know, you were equally in size. Why, you know, I wasn't understanding. The one thing that Bob never prepared me for wasn't until then, because we had a couple conversations then, was the politics.
Mm.
And he goes, you paid your dues. He goes, next time you're going to come back, you're going to win. And he was right.
Politics in the AAU or MPC?
No. Just even with NABA, you know.
Okay.
You know, so it's just the way it is, right? I mean, you if you want to beat the champion or whoever, you know, is a little better than you,
mm-hmm.
you better come ready, you know, and a little bit better because of the slight politics, right? They got to get to know you, and then it became incredible for me anyway. Not only lifestyle wise, but you know, the people there. I loved starting my tours in England and all that stuff.
Okay.
Because I just made a lot of friends there. But
well, it sounded like Bob was like, he liked the history of the Mr. America and the NABA universe. And then he also saw there was an avenue there for you to make really good money by doing the seminars were so big. Like Jeff King, he made so much money for years.
Absolutely.
Seminars, guest posings all over Europe.
Absolutely. Yeah. And all you had to do was be 75 to 80% of your best condition.
Yeah. There was a career there. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. They loved Americans. They loved Americans. And you know, so you know, after that, you know, Amateur Universe in '86, you know, I said, you know, maybe we should try the NPC. And of course, then he prepared me for the politics. Yes. That's when I really saw the real politics, right?
Yeah. And I said, the AAU and you were a champion.
Huge. And after, you know, not placing well and whatever, you know, we had a good talk. He goes, what do you want to do now? And the lesson had already been taught, right? And I said, Bob, I said, I got it. You know, we're going back to the universe. Let's work all year. Okay.
Yeah.
And then in 88, I won the amateur. And it was a super loaded, you know, amateur universe. And I was very proud for not only making the decision, but, you know, the learning process, right? I learned about the politics. I learned about the people, you know, and I grew as an individual. That was when I really grew as a person, right? And I knew Bob was really proud of, you know, of me staying with the real, true bodybuilding, right? Where it all started.
You know, Bob always kind of,
it's like if you love golf, you go to Scotland, Ireland, right? it was the same idea, right?
Okay.
And then I stayed committed to the NAB organization. Me and Bob eventually brought NAB organization to the United States.
Oh, okay. So
you know, it was something that we really wanted to give back. And
did you think you had an advantage competing in height classes compared to weight classes? No difference.
No, I never looked at it that way. I just figured it's always going to come back down to a few things. One was, did you train harder than everybody else? That was always a question I put to myself. You know, did you sacrifice more than the next guy? Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you put 110% into it? Not 100%, 110% into it. Because if you did, nobody can take it away from you. And that's, I've always had that belief of, you know, if I followed that structure, I always wind up, you know, winning because I was super focused. And the few times that I wasn't, as I explained, it was more due to being, you know, being a young man and relationships and being distracted. And so it wasn't because, oh, he's got a weak body part or something like that. It was literally, he didn't put the work in.
Yeah.
Okay. And Bob was always very inclined to make me think, trust what you feel, okay? And if you feel like you didn't work hard enough,
you didn't.
It's going to show.
Yeah.
And I've taken these lessons. And interesting enough, it's kind of resonating. And now, you know, as we're talking, you know, all the things that Bob spoke with me about and how it's kind of channeled into my life, you know, and it's kind of interesting how it step one led to step two and it's just evolved and it made me a better person, you know, and it made me care more about anything that has to do with health and fitness, the people that I work with, you know. He was creating a monster, but a monster in a good way, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how Bob was. You know, I think Bob always wanted the best and the most from you. You know, see, if he believed in you, he'd put his heart and soul with you. If you're going to be the guy that, you know, cheating on your diet, eating cookies, well, guess what? he'd let you know.
Right.
And I just never wanted to let him down. It was just very special. And I've heard many stories, not only from, you know, Matt and other guys and Jerry and Casey Kacharik and all these guys, you know, you know, these are great bodybuilders, you know, and, they all felt the same way.
Yeah.
You know, it just creates you as a better, I think it created a better human being.
Yeah.
And I think that's very special.
Yeah. So going back to your competition, I see in 84, you did go over to the MPC Nationals.
Yeah.
10th. And you were, now you're only like 19 then, right?
Yeah. I was young. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How was that experience getting going? Because that was a huge show. That was in New Orleans, I think. That was the year that.
Yes, exactly.
Natashak, I think, won the middleweights, right?
Yeah. Look, it was one of those things where that was one of those relationships at the time that I just wasn't training hard, you know?
Oh, really?
I can't blame anybody except myself. I know the times that I did not put, I was putting, 80%, 90% into it. And you can't. Bodybuilding is, it's like life or death. You got to be willing to take it to the limit. And that was one of those years. That was one of those years that just didn't work out for me. But I always learned from it. I always came back stronger. It happened three times, and every time I came back and I won, it always made me feel that, hey, only you can do this, those weights are there looking at you, but nobody's going to lift them up unless you're willing to do it.
Yeah.
Anybody can give you, like Bob would give me the advice and all that stuff, but you got to then follow it. Cause if you don't, you're not going to see results. And that's, I was just a student. I was a student of Bob's philosophy. I was a student of literally the era. I just wanted to be the best I could be. And maybe all along, I always thought, I was never an egocentric guy. Even to this day, I always everybody calls me Jack LaLanne. I always wear a suit. I'm like, well, I don't need to be showing what I look like, what I used to look like, whatever. That's the way I was. But I always had this kind of method of wanting to be remembered, right? And mm-hmm. to be remembered for me was, it was always like, I'd be backstage, and I do this all the time, and I'd be pumping up, I got this suit on, nobody can see anything, and I would never take it off until literally it's, okay, we're about to go on stage, and then quickly put the oil on, and then, of course, when I'd see the jaws drop, that was like, okay. Then I'd go on stage and just be this giant killer, and that's kind of like, kind of what got me kind of through the nerves and and all the things that kind of come with the sport, right?
It was
an interesting time. I'm sure you went through it, and it was special. I don't know if kids today go through the same processes we went through, and is it meaningful to them as it was for us? Maybe I don't think so. These kids are now just they're posting stuff on, I'm like, dude, you wouldn't be able to win a competition if you went back in the 80s,
Right.
It's just kind of interesting how, the sport evolved. And I was truly hoping, that it would have maintained itself like the 80s, into the 90s and so on. And it became a freak show.
I think that the teenage shows in particular have really just gone away.
Gone. Absolutely.
And I see teenagers in my gym. I train at a powerhouse out here in Tampa, and I see teenagers training, but they don't really, not to be too critical, they don't have too much of a physique. And I see them like taking their shirts off in the gym or in the locker room, and they're taking pictures or videos. And I'm like, the guy's got no muscle. What is he doing?
We were never satisfied with our era, right? We were never satisfied. No. We worked hard because all the guys in the gym were working hard.
Right. And the competitions were incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So you had no chance to win anything if you're going to be laxed. Right. And so we were driven. I think it was a great era.
What made us better was, that competition. You knew what you're going to be up against, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's changed. I think it's changed a lot.
They don't even compete. They just take their pictures. They just take the pictures of the gym and then they put them on social media, and that's it. That's their competition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And they're finding, there's this bodybuilder, and I don't know if you ever heard of him, Johnny Citroni.
I interviewed him.
Yeah. Johnny competed against Arnold knew Arnold really well and stuff. And his son Carlo is now 58, competed recently, over 50 universe and stuff. And I think he came in, he placed.
Yeah.
And I remember going last summer, took the family out there to see my best man and his wife, and he wasn't feeling well, whatever, So I got father and son, two different eras, but, Johnny would be like, there's nothing like the old time bodybuilding, So, and Carlos like, Yeah, but you didn't have the phone, and we can upload anything. We make money on it.
Right, right.
He goes, it's not about the money.
Right,
That was the beauty. He goes, I still like to go back and look at those old pictures of Arnold and me. And that's, I'm like,
yeah.
You know, that's bodybuilding, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it now. I personally don't call it
social media. Yeah.
Yeah. It's changed. It's changed completely. You know, not to say that these kids, some of these kids, you know, in the Olympia stage and stuff, they're not working hard. I'm sure they are. It's the meaning seems different, right?
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah. And I'm glad actually that somebody like yourself is still following through, you know, through your podcast and everything else, and kind of like let's okay to live into the 80s, in the 80s a little bit, you know. So
right.
it's you know, I give you credit. It's great.
Thank you. Well, let me go to 85, Victor. So you go back to the AAU and you go into Junior Mr. America, which was always a good show.
Yeah.
And you win the short class, and then another guy from my gym, he owned USA Gym, Chuck Sanow.
Oh my God! No kidding.
He wins the medium. Yeah.
Wow.
So I was training in the gym with Chuck during those years, and I remember him going in all these shows.
Oh my goodness. No kidding.
Yeah. And Keith Whitley won the tall class. I remember Keith.
Yes, yes.
He was a big guy from Texas, right?
You big dude. Big dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in Tennessee.
Okay.
Yeah. That was not light competition.
Yeah. But Chuck was a good competitor.
Yeah. Yeah, but I remember coming in, you know, then I had been, you know, I had hurt the hamstring 4 weeks prior. And
that was the one? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And, but, you know, I came in very full, you know, I think I carved, you know, at that time really properly, you know.
Yeah. What did you weigh for that one?
I was 173.
Okay. What's your height?
What's that?
What's your height?
5'5".
5'5". Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you go to the America that year, and that's the one, like you said, that Antorino won.
Yes. Yeah. And Mike
won the short class there.
I won the short class, but Mike truly deserved it. Mike not only was in great condition, but he had a little bit more size than I did. You know, me and Mike actually became really good friends when we went to the Universe.
Okay.
You know, in 86. And
how did he do in the Universe?
Got robbed. He literally got robbed. I mean,
I didn't know he did the Universe. I was talking about that.
He did. And that actually, I think, is what made him just say, you know what, enough's enough.
Oh, really?
He deserved. He actually that year was Charles Clermont. Charlie didn't deserve it. Charlie was really smooth.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike was sharp. I was stunned.
Hmm.
You know, not because I liked Mike or whatever. We got friendly, whatever. You know, he truly was in the best condition that I had seen him, even better than the America.
Really? And, wow.
And he deserved that.
Why didn't he do the Universe that year in 85 when he won the America? Do you know why?
You know, honestly, I don't know. Okay. I don't remember Bob saying anything. I mean, I'm not sure, you know, if it was just because of work. Because, I mean, the guy worked hard, you know, had a pretty, you know, pretty good job. And, you know,
What did he do? What was he doing for a living?
I thought he sold insurance, if I can remember correctly.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But I would have thought that. From the America, I figured, oh, you know, he should be going, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know why he didn't go. You know.
Did you go to the NABBA Universe that year?
No.
No.
Okay. That year I only did the that was a junior and a Mr. America.
Right.
Yeah. So that was the two in the same year. Bob was very particular about burnout, you know.
Okay.
And he's right, because it's pretty hard to really peak well. Like I peaked well for the junior, and then for the America I tried to get a little leaner. And okay. I actually lost a little bit of size. I was leaner,
okay.
But I lost that fullness, and I think with that fullness It might have given Mike maybe a little bit more run, but
okay.
Quick story about the America. So Jerry, you know, Jerry's a little taller than me, and he's even more than 5'6".
And he was so, in your class.
So, but Bob, you know, Bob's like, I can't have Jerry and Mike in the same class. You know what I mean? So I don't know how he got him to my class, but he got him to my class. And of course, I beat Jerry, you know, that yeah. year. But I mean, Jerry was a monster. I'm like, his legs were like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, Bob, I said, well, it's a team. It's like, how come? He goes, well, you know, you got Mike, you know, you got.
And, go one you know, or the
Bob,
other, yeah.
Bob was just, you know, he wanted to help everybody. So he probably felt so bad, you know.
Yeah.
He goes, it's okay, you know, so you come in second. And maybe Jerry comes in second or third. You know, it's okay. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jerry was just a little, he was just a little bit off, maybe a few pounds. He needed a couple more pounds off.
Okay. And
it would have been the difference because he was a lot bigger than I was.
Yeah, yeah.
Jerry was massive.
Were you second overall to Mike in that show, in the America?
Yes, okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And me and Mike, you know, we didn't really know each other. We only got to know each other when we went to the universe. You know, Bob introduced me to him, but it was never, you know, a relationship. So,
yeah.
You know, after the universe, so Mike was in very good condition, stayed on. People wanted to, you know, so I did a couple guest spots with him.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden, I was like, first time ever on my own, you know, because I lived at home, you know, with my mom and dad, you know, and my brothers and sisters. And so I'm traveling to Europe and I'm like, oh, I got to live in a hotel. Yeah. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So Mike. Yeah, Mike actually became friendly with Brian and Hazel Robinson. And so Mike eventually had to go back to the United States. And I had a couple of guest spots somewhere else, more north. And Brian's like, hey, would you like to stay at our house? I'm like, be better than a hotel. So I went up to the Newcastle area. And that was an experience, you know. So I've experienced not only great relationships, but just great history, and I'm a history buff anyway, seeing the old castles and all that stuff. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
What did you get to see that year? Where did you go? Where did you travel to?
I traveled to Edinburgh. I had a guest spot there. I had, I think, one in Newcastle, so near their house. I had a few of them, nothing, a couple seminars. And then that relationship started. And then after that, they're like, every time you come out, you're going to come to our house. We'll drive you everywhere. And so after winning the in 88, I stayed for 3-4 months.
Okay.
And I was just doing guest spots everywhere. Ireland, Scotland, you know, England, yeah. They were just so nice and they drive me everywhere. They never had kids, so they kind of took me in as their own kid, you know.
Yeah.
Still to this day, you know, they're now, you know, they're 85, 86, you know, and it's you don't forget those people.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
They're very instrumental in the success of my career, so it's been unbelievable.
How were the seminars back then, Victor? Like, would you do them at a gym or something?
A gym. Sometimes it would be nightclubs. You know,
it's
totally different over there. It's like people drinking and this and that. So you do the seminar. Then they got the music blaring, you know.
It's really cool.
And then you get up on, you know, a little stage, like, you know. It's like they want you to pose. They make it fun. They make it, and here, I never really, honestly, with any guest spot, anywhere from Maine to wherever, I never found a guest spot where it was just like pure love from everybody, right?
Mm.
People just wanted to be near you, wanted to hear you, we wanted to, you know, know everything about you, wanted to buy you pictures, you know. Not here. Here was a little different, a little more, you know, more lax, you know, okay, oh, show's over, I'll see ya, you know.
Yeah.
It was different. You know, they really welcomed you. And once they loved you, man, I'd go from, you know, competition to competition and people would be like, same people would show up. I'm like, didn't you buy my picture last week? Oh, yeah, but I need another one. You know, that's how it was. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know,
That's another thing that's gone now is because of social media, the seminars. There's no seminars anymore.
No, absolutely.
Or no guest posing, for that matter. People don't guest pose anymore.
Yeah. It was huge. It was huge then. I think that even there, it's died out some, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
But it's, and I think it's because of all the social media stuff and everything else.
Yeah.
You know? But
Because the only way you could see a bodybuilder back then was to actually have to go to a seminar, go to a guest posing to see them. Otherwise, you just see pictures in the magazine. You would never, hear their voice or anything, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Now it's very detached, right? And I loved, you know, you go into a gym, it's like everybody's around you, you know, like you felt claustrophobic. But, you know, I used to do seminars even at, you know, like schools and, you know, high schools and that kind of stuff in England. And I loved it. Kids everywhere, you know, it was a blast. Yeah. But there they promoted, you know, here not so much, you know, they'd put in a newspaper, oh, Mr. Universe is coming, you know, right. to the school, you know,
right.
and you take pictures with the kids and all. It was
different era.
It was a different era, but they made you feel like a star, right?
Yeah.
It felt like a rock star. It was very special time, you know, very special time.
Yeah. Now, did you do the WABA World Championships that year too?
Yeah, that was when we went to Guadalupe.
Okay.
Yeah. That was, I haven't spoken to Jerry in a long time, and it's every time we've spoken, it's like we usually talk about that. I mean, that was an experience and a half.
Oh, was that the one in Massachusetts? Or no?
No. The WABA was in Guadalupe.
Oh, okay.
The island.
Did you do that one in Massachusetts? Where
no, I didn't. That was the Coors. The Coors beer had this pro. It was kind of like a pro level. And the finals was in California.
Mm.
And Bob helped me through that too, and that was. So that was 89.
Okay.
That was 89. So I won 88. And then 89, we did that little course tour, which is where I won Massachusetts. Then I won the overall title in California.
Okay.
And then of course,
they had the WABA in Worcester, didn't they? They had a pro and an amateur.
Yeah, I don't think I competed in that.
Oh, they had you. They got you here in the internet under.
Oh, maybe as a guest. Larry. Maybe as a guest holder.
No, they said Larry got first. You got second in the short class. Richard.
Larry, who? Larry who?
Larry Bernstein.
Oh, Larry Bernstein. Geez, they might have that incorrect because I thought did I man, I have to look back.
I don't think I ever remember seeing pictures of you on that show.
I don't ever remember that either. I thought the only time I actually competed against Larry was in that universe in '86.
Hmm. Okay.
I'll have to check that because that could be like, you know,
yeah.
something that's out there that maybe sometimes, I even forgot
sometimes
about.
Sometimes they're wrong, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so 86, then you go, that was the first time you did the NABBA Universe.
Yes, yes.
You got third.
Yes.
Behind Larry and Sammy.
I need it, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, then Sammy was second to me in 88.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he was, Sammy was from Australia, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it was good, you know, good physique, you know, it was always in good nick, you know, good condition. And, but that year I came in bigger. I competed at, I was 183 pounds.
Wow.
At the amateur.
Okay.
I was pretty chiseled for that. And of course I won the overall there too, so.
Yeah, but 87, you went back to the MPC.
87 went back to the NPC.
The Nationals, yeah.
Yeah.
That class was stacked. I think that was the one Sean Ray won.
Exactly. That was another relationship, and that was the year that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm telling you, it was. I had three of those in my career, and it was just a lack of focus, you know, because I'm always honest with myself. Like, if I wasn't training hard, if I wasn't in very good shape, then be honest, you know, because you can't say, create excuses. Well, you know, the judges. No, I know the times that I deserve to win, and it's just part of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, there's a few times in your career that, hey, you know, it was that close that they're not going to go for the guy with just, you know, size and shape. You know, maybe they're going to go for the guy that's, maybe not, you know, has the same shape, but he may be a little more chiseled.
Yeah.
So, and that's that personal preference when it comes to judging. I've judged many times, and it's like I always try to be honest to the guidelines, you know.
Yeah.
But the guidelines are vague.
Yeah. So were you still going back between MTC, AAU, I think that was
literally those few times, and okay. I think after that, I just said, you know what,
never.
Yeah, it's, you know, how many times do you need to make the same mistake?
Right.
You know, you're not going to be accepted. And I remember, I'm like, you know, at the time, I'm like, I know I'm better than Lee Labrada. You know, I know I have bigger legs. I know I'm more balanced, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, you know, so go be a champion somewhere else, mm-hmm. you know? I'm glad I did, because I got more for it.
Yeah. Those NPC shows in the 80s were so, there were so many people. It was easy to get lost. You know what I mean?
You know, and honestly, I think that was part of it. I think these judges were looking at so many bodies, right?
Yeah, it'd be like 40 guys in a class.
You got 40, 50 people, you know, you can't compare every, you'd be there for 2 hours, right?
Right.
You couldn't compare all the bodies. And I think, you know, if you went on the side, you know, the lighting wasn't great or whatever.
Yeah.
You kind of got displaced, you know, and I think that's probably part of the reason. It's not like, I don't think it was like literally just politics. I think it was just the structure. The structure wasn't that great at the time, you know. So
it went so fast too. They judged it so quick.
And by the way, they were growing so fast that everybody was, you know, it was getting a lot of publicity. So all these bodybuilders were just jumping ship, just wanted to. You know, so you got all these bodies, and if you're not going to be judged properly, it makes sense.
That happened to me, and not that I was at your level at all, but I did the 89 Junior Nationals MPC, and I was probably in the best shape of my life. I was a heavyweight, but I was only 205, 5'8".
Okay.
And, my brother was always he was kind of like Bob, good critic. He knew what he was looking at, and he would always tell me the truth. He'd be like, you're going to get third, you're going to win, you're going to get fifth. You know, he would always just be straight. He wouldn't sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even make top 15. I didn't even make the cut. And I put my clothes back on. I went out to find him. You know, we didn't have phones back then. So I'm looking all over for him. I don't know where he's at. And he's in the third row with his camera like this, waiting for me to come out for the finals. And I'm like, let's go. And he goes, what are you doing with your clothes on? And I said, I didn't make top 15. He goes, you're in top five. You might get third. I was like, wow. So I think that was, not that it happens all the time, but I think that was one of those cases where I might have just got overlooked, you know?
You know, the funny thing is, I think it happened more than it did during, between like 84 and 88 in the NPC. It was just too many bodies, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's a certain exhaustion from the judges, you know, and I get, you know, after you look at so many bodies, okay, you start like, how do I critique? This is so close, you know?
There's no slackers. They're all good bodies.
Absolutely. How do you make those judgments? And I think a lot of the guys might have gotten pushed to the side, you know? So, which is too bad. But it was kind of how the sport was at that time, you know?
Yeah. But that wasn't even like, I just shrugged my shoulders. I'm like, wow, I'm in the best shape of my life. Top 15. Let's go home. You know, what are you going to do?
Right. You just... And I was the same way. It's like, okay, go back to the drawing board and you know, see what happens. But, you know, Bob just kept, you know, it was always that, you know, hey, you've experienced this again. Do you want to keep doing this?
Yeah.
And eventually at that point, that was kind of the last straw. And I just said, you know what, you know, put all the effort into the amateur universe, you know, win that, you know, and then that actually solidified, you know, my career, because I was, you know, on top of the world at that point, right? It's like, okay, what do you want to do next? Because only you can decide, and only you can either win or lose.
Yeah.
And so, you know, making that change back and forth. And then, of course, 1990 was literally the where, like, I worked hard for 2 years. I came in much bigger. That was the year that, you know, I came in second to Charles Clamont.
Mm-hmm.
And the pro, and I'll go to my grave that I know I won that show. You know, mm-hmm. that was about 195.
Holy cow!
And it was probably the fullest I ever was, and my legs were huge, and I was like 30 inches at the time. And then, my arms were 21. You know, it's like everything was just like where it should be. You know, like I really, at that time, it was the first time I felt like I'm a true pro. And
still had the small waist.
Yeah. And then, you know, when I saw Charles, he was in good condition, like, yeah, you know, but awesome. His legs were small, you know, I just figured, he's got big arms, you know, good chest, you know, but, you know, I had him on the back and, you know, I just figured, you know, I got him on the lower body, you know,
mm-hmm.
It was just, you know, but, you know, he had been winning, you know, I think he had won it twice or three times in a row.
Okay.
I think actually after that, he actually felt pretty bad. And I know he did because we had some conversations about it. And he did with, you know, Brian Hazel, my best man. And and I think after that, I think he decided to go to the IFBB.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was a great guy, though, you know.
Yeah.
You know, guys like that, it's like, you can't even be upset about it because –
Yeah,
he knew and he felt bad about it. You know, we all knew that. Hey, that's personal preference from judging. That's how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
So after that, you know, I said,
how
okay.
How did it feel to win the amateur in '88 when you won that? That was the first.
Oh, that.
That one of the highlights of your career.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that. The classes were loaded. Every class was loaded.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Teams from all over the world, you know, and then of course, you know, winning that and then going to the really the special sites for guest spots, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, you know, and people were just going nuts. You know, you'd go into these places, they were just like packed, you know, old, like these venues that were just full of history and people just horns stomping, you know. And I mean I'd go out there and do a 5-minute spot. They'd call you back another 5 minutes. You know, you'd be out there 12, 15 minutes,
geez.
You know, totally gassed by the time you were done. And
it was just
a very special time. That was when everything changed. And
how many weeks were you out there then after you won?
I was out there for months.
Months?
I was there for months. Yeah. Yeah. And luckily, you know, Brian had his own gym, so I could train, you know.
Was it all in, like, England, or were you going all over?
England. Primarily, I did mostly England, Scotland, Ireland, you know. So I truly stuck to the NABBA. The NABBA, I'm losing, got 20% on my... it truly was just one of those incredible years that, you know, not only the win, but just the observation of the history of NABBA and even the country, and it was outstanding. You know, we take a lot of things for granted here, but there was like, wow, you know, it's you were overwhelmed because they made you a star.
Yeah,
and that's and that drove me to train even harder for the next one. You know, so.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how, you know, things went by, you know. And
you were a short class guy and you won the overall, so I'm sure that's
correct. Yeah, yeah, which I honestly, when I went into it, I'm like, hey, just want to win the class. And Bob was the same way. Let's go for the class, you know, because it's really hard to win, you know.
Yeah.
You know, the overall in the universe. And yeah, and it was kind of unanimous.
Yeah, although Matt did that too. Matt Dufresne, he won the short class overall.
Matt did it. What year was Matt? 89?
89, yeah.
89, yeah.
Year after
you. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, he did it the year after me, and then I went to the pro, you know, for the first time in 90, then won.
Second to Charles in 90, and then came back in 91, and you won it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then, obviously, you know, 93 was the Kowak. You know, Kowak was he was in incredible shape, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I just, you know, because of getting sick, it just antibiotics just kind of ruined me. But that would have been very interesting because I was hovering around 200 then, and it was probably going to be my like best condition.
Really?
And it's too bad. It was like about a week and a half out where I started feeling kind of shitty, and then And it's unfortunately, you know, the antibiotics just, and by the time I got there, I wasn't feeling well, you know, you get the bloat and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, you know, what are the breaks? Because I always wanted to compete against Kowak.
Mm-hmm.
He was an incredible physique.
Yeah, he was.
You know, he's not gone, but he was a gentleman.
Yeah. So you were getting bigger pretty much every year, right?
Yeah, I had this thing, you know, about, you know, Bob kind of, when we spoke about, okay, how much weight can I actually gain? He goes, I want you to gain 7 pounds of lean muscle mass every year. I don't know how he came up with that number, but guess what? that was my goal every year, go for the 7 pounds.
Yeah.
And it's kind of amazing when you think about it, you know, you're 100 pounds and all of a sudden now you're 200 pounds. It's like another body, right? Another body built, you know, it's not like you're adding bones to it, right? You hit that muscle, right?
Same height, yeah.
It was pretty incredible. And I actually felt, and I've lost my flexibility. I could literally almost do a split, you know. I could move on stage really well, you know. It was just, you know, today these guys are like, you know, they're like out of breath and all this stuff. My frame held it, you know, kept it very well. And
yeah,
I think that's just genes. I think that's just luck. You know, you're born with it.
Yeah. So how old were you then on your last show, man?
So in 93, 27.
Wow, 27.
Yeah. So, you know, I would have been, you know, kind of getting into my peak.
Yeah.
Look at all the guys today. It's like between 27 and 33, right? That's kind of like, you know.
Well, it seems like the guys were a lot younger back then. Like, you know, Jeff King won the America. I think he was 22. And
22, yeah.
You were in your 20s, you know, early 20s when you were
winning.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things, right? I think we trained harder. I think we were smarter, you know. I think in today's world, it's more induced, you know.
Yeah.
And I do see some of these guys, you know. I see, you know, Hardy, you know, how he works out and stuff. But it's almost like always photo op, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, go to the gym and work out. I used to work out literally 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the evening.
Wow.
No, hour and a half of cardio. One muscle group in the morning, you know, with an hour and a half of cardio. For an hour and a half, if I did chest, it was, this is now obviously not as a beginner, but maybe after the America, going into the universe, I was spending 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the evening. That was my job, you know? And so I was very committed. I never wanted to be super overweight, you know, in the off season, you know, because it's just tough. It's tough on the body.
Yeah.
And I think I was always.
What would your weight get up to in the off season?
I was never more than 20, 22 pounds, sometimes 25 pounds overweight.
Okay.
I never went really more than that. And that was later in my career. You know, early on, I was always within like 10 pounds, 12 pounds, you know?
Yeah.
So I always stayed kind of, you know, pretty good condition. But, I think Bob, you know, wanted to make sure that it was a healthy path, you know, a healthy, you know, kind of focus, you know, with that program. And, you know, so you wouldn't have any issues in the future, you know. You don't want to be able to have kids. You want to be able to enjoy your life and, you know. And, I think that was something that was well taken, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I really believed in his concepts, and I believed in, you know, what he was trying to do for me, you know. So,
yeah. What do you think about the bodybuilders today at the size they have?
It's pretty amazing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they, you know, they're enormous, but. I always, you know, used to use the word pleasing physique, you know, the words mm-hmm. pleasing physique, and they're just not pleasing, you know. Look, I mean, if you look at, you know, the lower levels in the Olympia, sure, they look great, you know, but the top level, I mean, look, if you can't control your stomach on stage, sorry, that's not bodybuilding, you know.
Even if it's not sticking out, I think once you get past a certain body weight, right? I mean, for your height, it's just going to maybe make your waist a little wider.
Absolutely. I think it's that thickness changes so much that you become more like a block, right?
Yeah.
And so these blocky physiques, you know, they're impressive because they're massive, right? And they come in good condition. I give them credit. But I guarantee you, after all these years, I'm 60. I've been 180 pounds, and I don't fluctuate. Like, the reason I came down to, because I was, when I stopped bodybuilding, I was like 205, and I took up golf, and I figured, okay, there's no way I can make a really nice turn, for golf if I want to be a good golfer, And I literally lost 1 to 2 pounds a year. That's how scientific I was with it. I didn't want to have the loose skin. I really wanted to just like do it right. And I've been now, 15 years, 180 pounds. I work out, one hour a day, just to maintain, to stay in shape, stay healthy. And I feel good. I can play my golf. It's all good.
Yeah. When you guys, and in particular your philosophy when you were competing back then, was your idea just to get bigger, or was it like, what were you looking for when you're trying to develop your physique?
At the end, it always came back to Bob's words, make sure you focus on balance.
Okay.
And despite, he said, you're going to get so big at one point that eventually if your waist starts getting a little bit bigger. And I remember I'm like, wow, I was like 28 and a half, I couldn't get it down, in the pro universe. And then I said, it could be just a bit of bloat, so I'm going to cut down the carbs and everything else. And it came back down, but it was telling me that that 200 pounds was about max for a 5'5" frame. And I didn't want to change the physique. The physique was, for me, looking back now, I wanted a structure that was going to be recognized and admired. And not because it was just big. It was because it was balanced. It was pleasing, had great lines, right? Great look.
Yeah.
And that's really what I strive towards. So maybe I was a bit more scientific than most bodybuilders, but it was only because Bob was feeding me that information, right?
Yeah.
And I took that information to heart.
Okay.
And of course, that's how it all turned out,
Yeah, when I talked to Lee Haney, he told me that, he won 8 Mr. Olympias, and he said he was 243 at his first one and 254 at his last one. So in 8 years, his body weight only increased 11 pounds.
Exactly.
But his face was probably, just as small.
Exactly. The difference was he refined it, right?
Yeah.
He refined it. And that refining, and that's where I was always, had that thing in my mind of the 7 pounds of muscle, but not, you have to still have that refining stage, right? You have to refine the body to a point where you look like you're 250, And I remember going to that, to the pro, and I'm like, seeing pictures now, I'm like, wow, if you're separated enough and if you're thick enough and you have these thick bellies, you're going to appear twice as big. That was the difference I think it was Bob's concept all along, and he'd feed me the right information, the right kind of concepts, and he knew I was going to do it, He knew I was just going to go follow and do it and not veer off that goal, and it worked. It actually worked, and I thought Bob was a very scientific guy. He had great knowledge, and I was because he knew I was a sponge, I always wanted to pick his brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was okay. How do I always make it a little bit better every year? And I always wanted to. And interesting enough, having those 3 bad years, it excelled me into more focus, and that hyper focus kind of made me realize, okay, I've done it before, I can do it again. So it's the belief. Right. It gave me that belief to just advance my body and maybe get to a point where, okay, it's as close to perfect as possible.
Yeah.
And that was always kind of a goal of mine.
Yeah. That's so, well said, because that's what it was about, developing the perfect physique,
Absolutely. Now, absolutely.
Putting on
exactly
10 pounds a year, or 10 pounds a year, Yeah.
Well, you'd hear Arnold, you'd hear Frank Zane, all these guys, that's what they spoke about. Right. And they never stopped, right? They never stopped working towards that goal, even though Arnold didn't have the best of legs. But he tried to achieve, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I think personally there was just not because he didn't work hard. It was his genes. His genetics weren't that great on his lower body. But he strived for that completion, right?
And it was more about the balance and the perfection than it was just the mass, you know?
Absolutely. And
I remember Zane, because when I got into bodybuilding, Zane was winning. And I remember actually his second year in 78 that he won the Olympia, he was actually a couple pounds lighter.
Yes.
He felt like when he won in 77, even though he won, he felt he was in better condition in 76.
Oh, he was grainy. He was shredded. I mean, you know, and he wasn't the biggest guy, but guess what? He had beautiful lines. And I admired specific body types, and you know, and everybody loved Arnold, just for Arnold, right? The arm, the back, you know, that stuff. For me, it was the thickness of like a Franco Colombo and his strength, and then you know Frank Zane for the shape and the definition, right? And then later, you know, in my career, you know, what's his name? He had the most beautiful body. He's in the 80s too. I love Labrada. I just never thought he had kind of curly hair. Oh, Paris. Bob Paris. I mean, Bob Paris to me was, so I looked at that body, and at around that time is when I decided to add more size, but try to maintain those lines. It required refining the workouts, the nutrition. You know, I use more, I guess more concepts in the health and fitness kind of focus, you know.
Okay.
I was just trying all different routines all the time. I never wanted my body to get used to anything. In both the nutrition and physiology part of it, I was like just a mad scientist. I just wanted to, you know, I'd keep measurements like literally every week. That's how obsessed I was with it. Weight all the time. You know, I wanted to make sure that, you know, because for me, you know, having the perfect symmetry, Bob had given me the ideal numbers, you know, it's like for your body type, you know, this is what you need, your arms, your calves, you know, your thighs have to be, you know.
Wow.
And cool. I used to like be so, so into it. And I would say, you know, with the neck and calf, you know, it was so close. I was like a hair away from like being exactly where I wanted to be.
Wow, that's great.
And I figured I needed like maybe another year or two of refinement, you know, maybe just a bit more calf, you know, maybe even a bit more flow on the quads, you know. But it was like it was like splitting hairs at that point, you know.
And
I figured, okay, I got it to where I wanted to be. And then the pro universe was, okay, I came in good condition. I was really well separated, you know, and I was really well, you know, well balanced, you know, had good thickness, and it showed. And it was the difference.
Yeah. That's great to hear that, because now it seems like it's just about how much they weigh, how ripped they are.
Yeah. I don't think they're scientific anymore like we were. No way.
Right.
It's a different meaning. Just pack on the mass, right? Pack on the mass.
Incoming condition.
Who cares what it looks like as long as it's big and ripped?
As long as it's bigger,
Exactly. So
Paris is a good example, because I remember, you know, everybody was saying when he turned pro that he could challenge Lee Haney for the Mr. Olympia, but he had an idea in his mind about how big he wanted to get. He didn't want to go beyond that.
He didn't want to go there. Exactly. Kind of
fought the system, you know, but... You know, and never he never went that far with it. He truly
had the ideal, balanced, symmetrical. I mean, everything was perfect.
Yeah,
everything was perfect. He just needed to then say, kind of like what I did, which was, okay, let's say 220, but I know I have to be 240 to go against Haney or somebody like that. But I got to put that muscle mass in percentages everywhere, right? Yeah. And that wasn't what he wanted, you know. But guess what? He sold quite a few covers, you know. He did very well for himself, you know.
Well, I tell people today, you know, this was 40 years ago. He competed. He never won a pro show.
Yeah,
people still remember who he is, and people still imitate his poses. where compared to all those other guys who did win pro shows back then, we've all forgotten about them. But we still remember Bob Parrott, you know, because of the physique he had, not because of that he won Mr. Olympia. You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
All right, Vic. Well, I'll let you go.
John, I really appreciate the appreciation is twofold. One, I'm glad to have met you, and I'm glad what you do for bodybuilders like myself. But it's made me feel good after all these years.
Yeah.
That, you know, somebody recognizing that we meant something. We did something.
Yeah. Yeah.
At least okay. You know, for society and for ourselves. And hopefully we can withstand many years.
Well, like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I think you're one of the most underrated bodybuilders because you had an incredible physique, and everybody who was around back then remembers you.
You know,
Chris Aceto, I talk to him occasionally, and he talks about you all the time.
I love Chris because I stayed a few nights with, you know, Bob and Chris, you know, and, you know, Chris at the time was, you know, kind of, you know, just starting out, you know, and
Yeah,
I mean, great guy, and he's done so much for the sport. And those are the kind of guys that, you know, you have to respect. You know, they give back to the sport. You know, they give back to their communities, and I think that's special. You know, so when you see him, you tell him I said hello.
I will. I'll see him next week at the Olympics.
Great.
All right, Vic. Well, it was John, great again. Maybe we can have you back on the podcast again, and it was great talking.
Maybe we can get some of the other guys together.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah,
get a bunch of those guys. Get Jerry. Get Casey Kocharek. All these guys.
Yeah, I've been trying to get Casey on the show. I had Jerry on years ago, but it'd be great to get all you guys back.
That'd be awesome.
Okay.
Great. Thanks a lot, John.
All right, Vic. Nice meeting you.
Be well. Be well. Thank you. Bye.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to all my Patreon donors for continuing to support the show. We couldn't do it without you. And thanks also to Victor Terra for a great interview. I never met Victor before, so it was great talking to him, and I really enjoyed it. And I know a lot of old school people out there, like Chris Aceto and Matt Dufresne, they really wanted to hear this interview because those guys are big fans of Victor Terra and of that era of bodybuilding. All right, guys. So we will hopefully be back next week with another interview. I'm trying hard to get Rick Wayne back on the show. It's been 2 years since we talked to Rick. I think it was in October of 2022, I believe. So I'm trying hard to get him back on. I know he wants to come on. So keep your fingers crossed. Maybe we can get Rick on, or if not, we can get somebody else. All right, guys. Until then, stay safe, train hard, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.